one-liners, shared master video, and party votes.
Can I please report? This is Alina Garcia with the petition.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. In State v. Ruffalo, this court recognized that it is both permissible and proper to place the burden of proof upon the owner of the property in a civil forfeiture proceeding. Thus,
well, let me ask you a question about that. The 1818 of the Code of Criminal Procedure starts out with subpart A that assumes that there's a conviction. So there's now been a trial, there's been a conviction, and then you proceed with the forfeiture. Subpart, what is it, B, you don't have the conviction. And so what, it seems to me, if you read Ruffalo, how you pronounce that, really accepts that somewhere along the line the state, at least by preponderance of the evidence, proves that a crime occurred. And then you move to the level of, okay, having proved by preponderance of the evidence that a crime occurs, now we go to the defendant and says, well, if you don't want your property taken, you're going to have to prove this wasn't part of the crime. But unless there's proof that the crime occurred, how can the state come in and just say, hey, Judge, Joe over there was gambling, and so we want his money, and then the state required Joe to come in and prove that he didn't commit the crime, or the money wasn't part of the crime. How do we get to that point without there having to be proof in the first place that a crime occurred?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, first of all, there is not a crime here, and this is not a proceeding against the person. This is a proceeding against the property.
But then what authorizes the state to force the property owner to prove the state can't take it?
Well, Your Honor, Article 1818 in its entirety sets up the procedures for when the state can seize property as an illegal gambling device. And we start in Article 1801, which requires the state to go before a magistrate and show probable cause in order to obtain a lawful warrant to go and seize the property. And then that property is returned to the magistrate. Then Article 1812 allows the magistrate, or actually requires the magistrate, to conduct an investigation. And it is during this time that the property owner can come and challenge the seizure under Article 1812, and actually get his property back before we proceed to an Article 1818 forfeiture proceeding. Now, once we proceeded to an Article 1818B forfeiture proceeding, this is a proceeding strictly against the property. And fundamental due process concerns have been addressed, as this court had noted in Ruffalo, because it requires that the magistrate give the property owner notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard. And then the legislature intended that the property owner would bear the burden of non-persuasion in order that this property has already been alleged to be an illegal gambling device, and that has been supported by probable cause, which the state obtained a lawful warrant to seize.
Well, but you argue that the state has to make that showing, or not. I read your brief to say, yes, we have to make a showing that this property was used again.
If anything, Your Honor, I mean, there is language in Ruffalo which suggests that the state has some showing in a forfeiture proceeding, and that has been construed by different courts of appeals.
Well, let me read your brief. Petitioners agree in principle with the majority of the Waco Court of Appeals, who required the state to make out a prima facie showing in order to show entitlement to forfeiture. You agree with that or not? That's in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct.
And what is that prima facie showing?
Well, that it is a gambling device, Your Honor.
But what standard? Probable cause?
Well,
preponderance of the evidence?
Basically, that there has been a lawful seizure, and that this seizure was supported by probable cause, that this was a gambling device. And then, of course, the state puts on evidence that, you know, how the machine operated and whether it complied with the definition of a gambling device.
I don't understand.
Which is incorporated into an Article 1818 proceeding. In Article 1818G, subsection G.
I don't understand what the difference is then between that showing And what you say the claimant must show in order to carry its burden of persuasion.
Well, Your Honor, because the state does not have a burden of persuasion in an Article 1818 proceeding. Basically, it just has to establish, if anything, that this was a gambling device and that it was lawfully seized.
But what does that mean compared to what the claimant must show, which is to show that it was not a gambling device? Why isn't that the same? I don't understand. Two sides of the same coin of what it sounds like to me.
The legislature established in Article 1818F that forfeiture shall ensue. Shall is very specific in the language of the statute, unless the property owner shows by a preponderance of the evidence.
Well, but what does the prima facie showing mean? Does it mean it has to be by a preponderance of the evidence? Does it just mean to say we seized this and this is all we have to show? What is the burden that
well,
the statement undertakes?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that would be construed in conjunction in the context of what this proceeding is. And that whatever that showing is that it comports with fundamental fairness.
Well, what is it? That's what we're asking.
Yeah.
Is it? Does the state have to put on evidence that if it were true and nothing else is said, would entitle it to forfeiture or not? Can the state just sit there?
Certainly, that if not in the language of Article
18. Well, I'm asking you, though. You can read the statute. But the judge bangs the gavel and says, call in this case. What says the state? The state says nothing. What says the contestant? The contestant says nothing. All right, well, then judgment for the state. Is that the way it works? Or?
Well, that is, I think, one possible construction of Article 1818F, because it does bear...
Is that the state's position, is what I'm asking.
No, Your Honor.
What is the state's
position? We agree that the state should come forward with evidence that these devices are gambling devices.
How much? Probable cause, enough evidence that if it's true, the state wins, or can you put a formula to it that you think is...
Well, Your Honor, in staying with an ordinary civil proceeding, which is what this is, then of course it would be a preponderance of the evidence standard. It would be by a preponderance of the evidence that these devices are gambling devices.
So you think when the trial judge calls the case, the state has to go first, and it has to put on enough evidence that if that were true and there's no cross-examination or anything else, the state would win.
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
Why is it not a prima facie as opposed to preponderance of the evidence
standard? Why is the state's burden not a prima facie case? Well, because this is a civil forfeiture proceeding, and since it's a civil proceeding, the standard in civil proceedings is a preponderance of the evidence standard. And now, the Tenth Court of Appeals did adopt a prima facie standard.
Well, the concurrence did, right?
Yes, it was the concurrence.
So you would disagree with
the majority held that the property owner did not, that they failed as a matter of law to prove that the property was not a gambling device.
But this is all really sort of academic, because the charge here said the state has the burden to show by preponderance the evidence, and because that was unobjected to, that's how we measure the evidence.
Well, actually, there's two different cases, Your Honor. Cherry Master was a case to a jury charge. I mean, to a jury, and so there was a charge. But Hardy was not a jury trial.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying in the former case, the state put the burden to the jury as preponderance, state's burden by preponderance of the evidence.
To prove that it was a gambling device only, Your Honor. And then the state objected, well, actually, complained about the trial court's failure to include an instruction that the owner of the property bore the burden of proving by preponderance of the evidence that his devices fit within the exclusion to the definition of a gambling device.
No, I understand that, but my question is simply that the state seemed to acknowledge. Well, let me just ask you this. The state acknowledges, and your position is that the state has to come in and prove by preponderance of the evidence, and once it's done that, then the burden shifts.
Well, yes, Your Honor. I don't necessarily believe that it would be a burden shift because the statute specifically places the burden on the owner of the property.
But that's where I get confused, because that, in response to Judge Heck's question, that would seem to indicate then that if the state did nothing, the state would win, and I think you said that's not the case. So the state does have to come in and put on preponderance of the evidence, and then it shifts to the defendant. It would have to.
Okay. To be clear, what I've stated is that, first, the statute is silent on what the state's burden is. But the state would agree that if it has a burden in a civil forfeiture proceeding, then it would be a burden to prove that the devices were illegal gambling devices based on the preponderance of the evidence. But the statute, though, it actually probably speaks to a different type of proceeding, because the Article 1818F says that the magistrate shall conduct a show cause hearing, which is usually an evidentiary hearing. And in a normal process, it would mean a hearing specifically before a magistrate, and a hearing specifically to show cause why the property should not be forfeited. That's what the statute says.
Ms. Garcia,
in that hearing...
I'm sorry, go ahead and answer the question, then I have a question.
In that hearing, it would seem that the owner of the property would be required to show cause why the property should not be forfeited, and therefore, he would go forward with the evidence first. That is the scenario or the framework that is set up in Article
1818. But are you asking us to make any evidentiary presumptions based on what happens in the magistrate's court? My understanding is we're starting clean here and trying to figure out what the state's burden is in the first instance. Are you arguing there should be some presumption that applies to the
magistrate? Actually, Your Honor, because the question is really because Ronquillo controls that the property owner carries the burden of proving that the devices are not gambling devices, then the question before the court is, did the property owner prove that the seized A-liners were not gambling devices and not subject to forfeiture?
That's my question. I read Article 18.18. If you read it literally, it seems to me that the government could come to your house and with a warrant, whether mistakenly issued or not, and pick up your whatever equipment you have, your computer, and take it for evidence. And they search through your computer and find out, lo and behold, you weren't engaging in any sort of illicit activity over the internet, and so there's no charges, you're not, nothing further happens, you don't go to the grand jury, and you get this letter from the district clerk's office saying, oh, by the way, we've got your $2,000 computer here, we're going to destroy it unless you prove it wasn't used for illicit internet activity. Now, a literal reading of 1818 says that you have the burden to prove that your computer was not used for illicit activity solely because the government has it in its possession from the issuance of a warrant. Do you believe the government has that there is no problem with that statute when there's not been a commission of a crime, there's not been an allegation of the commission of a crime, but your equipment was picked up through a warrant and stored with the government? Do you think the government has the power to destroy your equipment unless you can prove you didn't commit a crime?
Well, Your Honor, unless you could prove that the property is not illegal. Because an Article 1818 is only
no,
the
it's
end
just
of
not.
The line.
You have it's to prove that the property wasn't used as a part of. You're talking about the gambling devices. The statute isn't limited to gambling devices. The statute says you got to prove that it wasn't. Let's say you got to disprove that it was used somehow in the commission of a crime. I guess that's the forfeiture, or that the device wasn't gambling. If gambling is a complaint, but do you think the government has there's no problem under those circumstances with the government making you come and disprove the allegation that it's a gambling device in order to get it back when you're innocent?
No, Your Honor, because the constitutional concerns of seizing the property have been addressed. They've been addressed first before the property is seized by going before a magistrate and proving, you know, by a probable cause that there is a reasonable belief that this property is illegal. And then once that...
Well, let me explore this with you. Wouldn't it... Even the state concedes they have some responsibility to prove something. Isn't the hole filled in by the notion that if there's not a conviction for a crime, just if all you're doing is the civil forfeiture, just we've got that, and now you come forward. In the civil context, doesn't the state have some sort of obligation to prove that in this context that a crime occurred, and they only have to do it by preponderance of the evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt, and if they prove that, then it's going to be up to the defendant to have to come forward and show why this property shouldn't be forfeited. Isn't that the way it really ought to work when there's not a conviction?
Well, I believe that that's consistent with Justice Heck's question that, I mean, in a normal standard civil forfeiture proceeding, the state as the movement should come forward and show that there is, you know, at least evidence by preponderance of the evidence that the property is illegal and that it should be forfeited.
In our case in Rumplow, really, it sort of begins in the middle of that process. It talks about the defendant having to come forward and have some proof, but it really begins with the assumption that the state has already met, as a part of this process, its burden to show that this equipment was a part of a commission of a crime under the lower evidentiary proof.
Yes, Your Honor, that the state has met its burden. Actually, it starts with the state meeting the burden to show that there is probable cause that this is an illegal device. And when we go to Article 18, 18 forfeiture proceeding, that's already established because the property owner hasn't challenged the seizure. He hasn't come forward and tried to reclaim the property before the forfeiture. So that is already established. The legislature in Article 18, 18 established a constitutional framework for seizing property. And in Article 18, 18B and F, it has a constitutional framework for forfeiting that property.
So there's a separate provision. There's a separate provision for the claimant to come forward before the state has this show cause hearing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is that in the statute?
Article 18.12.
So is it your argument that probable cause equals preponderance of the evidence once you get to the district court?
No, Your Honor, but I'm saying that probable cause has already been established before we get to the forfeiture proceeding. The state has already had to establish that before it actually seized the property.
But which is meaningless in terms of your legal argument. I mean, what we're talking about is where you start at the district court level. Whatever's happened, prima facie, probable cause, doesn't matter. You've conceded that the state has to start out beginning the case, preponderance of the evidence.
Right, Your Honor, we start with proving that the devices are illegal government devices, and then the statute specifically allocates the burden of non-persuasion to the owner of the property. And if the owner of the property does not carry its persuasion and prove that the property is not a gambling device, then forfeiture, the state is entitled to forfeiture, and the magistrate shall dispose of the property.
Let me ask you about the merits, because I think at one point in your brief you assert this is all really a question of law anyway, and don't need to be worrying about the jury charge in the first case. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. I thought you took the position ultimately in your briefing that these are questions of law. We don't need to be worried about the jury charge anyway. That this court can decide based on undisputed facts whether these are gambling devices or not.
Exactly, Your Honor. Because as a matter of law, whichever way you look at it, whether the state, you know, has an initial burden of, you know, preponderance of the evidence, or the owner of the property has the initial burden of preponderance of the evidence. The evidence in this case, as a matter of law, showed that these devices did not fit the exclusion to the definition of gambling device.
It seemed to me, at least, and help me with this, is what the legislature was trying to get at is that you can't ever get a prize for a single play that's worth more than $5. Is that your understanding of what they were trying to get at?
Well, no, Your Honor. Our understanding and our what we believe is a reasonable construction of the statute says that the only awards that can be awarded are exclusively non-cash merchandise prizes, toys, or novelties.
What if the reward in this case were a gift certificate that could not be aggregated? It was worth $5. You could take it to Walmart and buy something up to $5, but you could not aggregate it with other certificates to get something that was worth more than $5. Would that be a problem under the statute?
Yes, Your Honor, that violates the statute for two reasons. First, because the phrase non-cash merchandise prizes, toys, or novelties is actually a limited list of actual awards that can be awarded. And because toys and novelties are listed with the word prizes, prizes is limited to the same meaning as toys and novelties. And so, therefore, what the legislature intended was only an award that is toy or prize, something that's trivial value.
So you could give a prize that was worth $5, but if it was something other than a toy or a novelty, that would violate the statute? $5 worth of dish towels would violate the statute.
Yes, because for the second reason, the adjectives...
Or $5 worth of soap would violate the statute.
Well, if it was actually a bar of soap, no.
That's not a toy or a novelty.
Well, it's a trivial thing. It's a novelty. It's not something that basically is trivial. That's what the legislature intended. It's just nominal value. It just doesn't have any substantive value.
So it doesn't turn on what it is, just how much it's worth.
It doesn't start with what it's worth. Of course, it's limited to 10 times a single play of the game or $5, whichever is less. But it doesn't start with that.
To be clear here, this is a situation under this record where you could aggregate those gift certificates to be whatever amount you ultimately win. I mean, you could have $5,000 worth of gift certificates go to Walmart and exchange those for merchandise.
Yes, Your Honor, because there was no limit on how many you could get. I mean, of course, you would get one $5 gift certificate for every 500 points or five tickets, because each ticket was worth 100 points. So that's correct. And moreover, to be clear, in this record, there was cash given. Now, the respondents attempt to create some confusion about, it's replay credits. No, there was no replay credit. Cash was awarded.
That was true in Cherry Master. That was not true in Hardy.
It was true in both cases, Your Honor.
I thought Hardy, the attendant actually never gave the cash to the player, but the attendant physically put the cash back into a machine.
It makes no difference, Your Honor, who gets the cash, because cash is being awarded. It's not replay credits. I mean, that's just basically a red herring, because cash is being awarded, and you're putting it into the machine. It's cash. Any way you look at it, they were awarding cash.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Larry Zinn and Mr. Barry Bishop will present arguments for respondents. Mr. Larry Zinn will open with the first 10 minutes.
May it please the court, there is no evidence in the Cherry Master record that these gift certificates were aggregated. It may have been possible under this record, but there's no evidence that they actually were.
So all these cases have these machines that are sitting here, just like a Buick automobile. And it's a very factually intensive inquiry on what happened at a particular location, the particular conduct between the players and the store employees, is it not?
Yes, it can be. But it was here.
But if the gift certificate does not fall within the exception, then you lose.
Probably so. But I don't see how...
As a matter of law. I mean, we can't have gift certificates in some case and not in another case.
Well, I mean, ultimately it depends how you define it. But depending on how you define it, it sure well could be.
If the facts are undisputed, if the state and whoever is testifying for it agree with the facts as recited by the owners or employees, would these cases normally go to the jury, since they are civil in nature?
If there's no fact question, there wouldn't be a need for a jury. But in this case, the state did not object to a jury, agreed that there were fact questions, and it was submitted.
Are there fact questions?
Yes, there were some fact questions.
What are the fact questions now as this case stands today?
Well, they weren't raised by the state in their briefing, but they were there at the trial. For example, what is a bona fide amusement device under the statute? They said that was a fact issue and that it ought to be submitted.
I guess my question is, do you think that there are fact issues?
Your Honor, it depends what you say the ground rules are.
How can one jury decide in Waco that the same machine is a bona fide amusement device and another jury in Austin say it isn't when they're exactly the same facts? How can that be a fact question?
Well, the court in Waco didn't say that.
Well, I'm just assuming it's a hypothetical.
We don't have much law in this area, so I think folks are grasping around and they thought it was a matter of law. They didn't rule on that ground, though. They ruled on the nature of the prize itself and that the gift certificates were not prizes.
Well, as I see, it seems to me that in this case, there is some dispute about whether or not they could take cash off the premises. But essentially, there's no dispute that money was actual legal tender was used to buy new games. That supposedly was what was supposed to happen. Or gift certificates were given. It seems to me that, let me start. As I read the statute, virtually any electronic game, whether it's at the movie theater where they're playing the shoot 'em up stuff or the race car thing, any of those things could be gambling devices if, as a result of whatever you win by playing the game, results in some tangible piece of property being given to you. And so whether or not it's a gambling device depends on the fact of what was the reward for having played the game. And in this case, there may not be any disputed facts. Rewards were given. The rewards took the form of a gift certificate or some cash to buy a new game on it. And we could decide that question as a matter of law. But the next case could have the identical machine and the argument being over whether they gave gift certificates or whether they gave cash, in which event the jury would have to decide, did they give cash or give an award, and that would determine whether it was a gambling machine. So the same machine, it just depends on what they got for the reward, and there could be a dispute over that. But in this case, we don't have a dispute over what was given, do we?
If there's no dispute over what the reward is, then sure, that issue could probably be determined as a matter of law, depending on how you define what that reward, whether a gift certificate can or not.
If the reward were a $5 bill, would that violate the statute?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that would be cash.
What's the difference between a $5 bill and a sheet of paper that gets you the equivalent of $5 worth of merchandise?
Because that was simply a means to the end. And that reward in the end was play on the machine. It wasn't cash. They could not pocket that cash. They could not put that in their pocket and leave unless they deceived the people as the undercover DPS agent did.
But they can pocket the gift certificate. Right?
They can take the gift certificate, which can only be up to $5.
And then they can use that, and they can use that to purchase the same thing $5 would purchase at the store that's participate.
Well, they could purchase merchandise with it.
But it isn't.
But they can't.
It's liquid, isn't it? You can give it to your spouse or to a sibling or to a neighbor and exchange it for $5. So does the question become how liquid the prize is?
Sure. I mean, I could sell this soup, but it's liquid. I could sell this watch, but I can't take it to your clerk's office and pay a filing fee with it. I mean, that's a cash equivalent. I can't take my $5 Walmart gift certificate and take it to your clerk's office and pay part of my fee with it. They're not going to accept it. Why? Because it's not cash. And it's not a cash equivalent. They'll take a cash equivalent, I assume, maybe checks if they trust me or whatever. But they won't take my gift certificate because it's only good at Walmart. It's only good for merchandise. Well, I can't even take it to Walmart and get $5 cash for it.
What if you gave an American Express gift certificate? Does it make a difference?
It could if that's a cash equivalent. That could
How do
well
you
be.
Measure cash equivalent? Are you going to look at the
example,
IRS definition or something more restrictive?
The IRS has a definition. It's listed in the Hardy petitioner's brief. We also have common sense. I mean, I can't take my gift certificate and deposit my checking account because it has value, but it's not a cash equivalent.
What if you take it to Walmart and you buy a $5 trinket? And then you exchange, you take it back the next day and say, I want a refund, and they give you cash back.
I don't know if they do that based on certificates. There's no evidence that happened, I suppose, in the hypothetical, perhaps, but it's not in the evidence here, and it would be something. I don't know Walmart's gift certificate policy, and whether you can exchange things and get cash back.
But didn't the legislature indicate some sort of intent by saying toy, novelty, prize? I mean, isn't there just sort of I picture Chuck E. Cheese, you know, the tickets for a sport gun sort of intent the legislature might have had in mind as opposed to a gift certificate to F.A.S. Schwartz?
Maybe, except they used the word prize elsewhere in 4701. And if prize means just a trivial amount in paragraph B, then it ought to mean the same thing elsewhere. But if it does, then that means prosecutors can only prosecute people under a gambling device if it's a trivial amount. They also define prize at the same time they passed the statute in the lottery, which they said the lottery awards prizes. Well, they can be pretty large. The truth is, I mean, you have to look at how they use prize elsewhere within the gambling device statute and throughout the legislation. And if you do, you find that prize means an award, one in a game.
Then what do we do with the word merchandise in front of prize?
We don't have a definition. It's important, I think, that they didn't say goods. So they weren't limiting, for example, in a UCC Chapter 2 sense, just something tangible. For example, a pinball merchant sells plays on his machine. That's his merchandise. Somebody runs a pinball arcade, his merchandise is the play on that machine. So these folks got either play on the machine or that gift certificate, only exchangeable for something tangible, in this case, merchandise.
Is it right that there's not a comma between merchandise and prize?
Correct.
So it's non-cash merchandise prizes.
Yes.
Is one thing. And then it's non-cash toys and non-cash novelties, is that right?
Yes.
And you have to be redeemed for just those things.
The reward. The ultimate reward would be a
representation of value redeemable for those items.
Right.
Well, the Walmart certificates are not limited to what you can get for them when you go to Walmart.
Well, all you can get at Walmart with those certificates, you can't get cash. All you can do is get something that's not cash.
But you could get something that wasn't a toy or a novelty or whatever in the heck a merchandise prize is.
If a prize is defined as something you win in a game, then all they could get at Walmart is something they won with that certificate.
So you'd have to really look to merchandise prizes and we have to figure out what that means for the Walmart certificate to not have a problem.
Yes, but you have to isolate prize out. You can't define it in terms of toy or novelty because they use prize throughout the gambling statute.
And I'm looking at it as non-cash merchandise prizes.
Yes.
I'm trying to understand what that means.
Well, that would mean, okay, non-cash, not cash, merchandise, we would think in terms of things you can get as opposed to cash itself, and a prize would be something you win in a game. It's a non-cash, something you get other than cash, you win in a game kind of thing.
Can you quickly tell me why A doesn't preclude winning other games?
Pardon?
Can you quickly tell me why 47.01... subsection A doesn't preclude you from getting other games? It seems to me that you can't win for playing one of these games, other games, when you read A.
Okay, I'm not following. I'm sorry.
In the statute, where
yes.
It defines gambling device.
Yes.
Penal Code section 47.014.
Okay.
And in subparagraph B, it says a gambling device includes games where the thing that you win is another game.
Yes.
Why doesn't that preclude the practice here, at least, where you win other games on the A-liners?
Because the evil there is the cash. The legislature didn't want cash being awarded.
And A doesn't speak in terms of cash.
On the machine is a merchandise.
A talks about credits, not cash.
Correct.
So the game keeps track of your credits awarded and canceled so that you get free games. Why doesn't that catch the free games aspect of the A-liners? Cash aside.
Well, now I see what you're saying. It should. These are free games, but these are credits that are just being used to be put back into the game. I mean, what if instead of cash they were tokens?
I thought A precluded that. That's my question.
Well, no, because B allows non-cash merchandise prize, and we're saying that the credit, the amount that you get back to replay a game, that ticket, is a non-cash merchandise prize. It's not cash. You can't walk away from it. All you can do is either play the machine, which is something that merchant's selling, or you get a $5 gift certificate that can be only redeemed for non-cash merchandise.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Coming in, I thought the biggest issue between the parties related to the burden of proof and how it works. I understand now the state concedes that it would have to make some showing at some point by a preponderance of the evidence that the machine it is seeking to forfeit to take is a gambling device, which goes back to your question, Your Honor, what happens if there is no evidence? So,
well,
given
on that point, do you agree that if the state makes a prima facie case, if it puts on evidence that, if true, would entitle it to win, if the contestant said nothing, and then the contestant does say something, that the contestant ultimately bears the burden of persuasion in the case or not?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. I think that's what the statute says. But I think it is important that the prima facie case must be a case that it is a gambling device. Now, the way this statute is structured, there is an exclusion from the definition of gambling device, the exclusion in paragraph B of the statute. So in order to make a prima facie case, or showing by a preponderance of the evidence, the state must show that the exclusion doesn't come into play, that it doesn't apply.
And but do you agree that whether a $5 gift certificate falls within the exclusion that we've been talking about is a question of law rather than fact?
I think that is a question of law for the court. And I think the intent of the statute, the plain language of the statute, is the non-cash. There is no question, I think, that a gift certificate is not cash. Now, the Court of Appeals in the Hardy case, my case, came up with a theory of cash equivalent, which is nowhere in the statute. And from that, the Waco Court reasoned that this was a cash equivalent, and thus it would violate the statute. Now, I suggest to the court that you can look at every definition of cash equivalent that's available to the court, be it in Texas statutes, other states, federal statutes, the Internal Revenue Code, and case law. And nowhere do you find that a gift certificate is a cash equivalent. And the reason is that the gift certificate is redeemable only at one place for certain things. It doesn't have the characteristics of tender. It doesn't have the characteristics of being negotiable, where it can pass freely.
You say only redeemable at one place for particular things, but at Walmart, there's everything, isn't there?
But, Your Honor, it's only at Walmart. And I suggest to the court, and I'll take an oath on this, that there's some of us who would rather pay $5 than go into a Walmart. Because and that is the reason that it's not a cash equivalent.
Isn't the record here, though, showing that one, at least one of the cases, the gift certificate was redeemable not only at Walmart, but three other establishments?
In the Hardy case, I believe it was all Walmart. And I don't remember that being in the record, Your Honor. There, it may well have been in the other case. It was Walmart and HEB. There was a choice of two or something.
I'm still stuck on the word merchandise. Can you offer any guidance as to what that means?
I think what the legislature tried to do when it passed this statute was it recognized that there are a kind of machine out there somewhere that are really not gambling, and that people play them in a fashion that doesn't violate the peace and dignity of the state. It's just not gambling.
So is a gift certificate merchandise?
A gift certificate is a certificate. Yes, it's merchandise.
Well, let me ask you this. What happens to the gift certificate after Walmart takes it?
Well, Walmart makes its profit on the item, and
well, I guess what I'm asking is, surely they just don't give this establishment a bunch of certificates. Does the establishment pay cash in exchange for the certificates? Are the certificates forwarded to the establishment to then reimburse what they were redeemed for?
Well, it would actually, the Walmart would sell the certificates to the operator of the machine.
So the operator will give Walmart $5. Walmart issues a certificate.
Or he might negotiate a little better deal, but yes.
So there is cash being given for the certificate. I mean, at the end of the day, it's cash for merchandise.
Well, but the operator paying for them is not cash. That's just like you or I going in and buying a gift certificate. The prize that's awarded is only the gift certificate with a value which falls within the limit that the legislature deemed to be harmless or not gambling under the law. I think the whole statute compels the conclusion that the legislature recognizes that there are machines all over that can give small prizes.
But isn't that the point? They wanted you to be limited to when you won, you could get merchandise or certificate of some kind that would let you get a piece of merchandise as long as the wholesale value wasn't more than $5.
Exactly, Your Honor.
It isn't one of the evils in these certificates. Is that they may not be the equivalent of cash, but to the extent that you can aggregate them, you can go out and buy a very expensive piece of merchandise, whereas you can't aggregate a bunch of stuffed animals and take them to Walmart and trade them in for.
But the legislature didn't address that. It put the limit as based on a per single play of the game. I mean, I can conceive of a person who probably wouldn't have very much else to do, but playing these machines day after day and hour after hour and winning a lot of certificates.
That's the point. It seems to me the legislature was trying to limit you to a prize that did not have a value more than $5.
Per single play.
And you could get something, let's say, a representation or value redeemable for something less than $5 so that you could get a bunch of prizes that were all less than $5, but what it didn't want you doing was getting something like cash that you could take out and use to buy something other than merchandise worth $5.
Well, I think certificate of value limited by per single play means just that. The legislature didn't address the issue of the number of times you can win. I mean, I would concede that someone could win a lot of times. That's like the kid with a good arm that goes to the state fair, he's showing off for his girlfriend and he wins all the bears on the rack. But
100 bears doesn't have the same value as $100 worth of merchandise. A single $100 gift certificate, that's my point, is that you can't aggregate 100 Cupid dolls and have much value. Whereas when you're aggregating these gift certificates, that's something else again.
Well, at least in economic theory, 100 bears is worth 100 times what one bear is. The legislature just didn't address that. It didn't address the number of times you might win. And by putting certificate of value in, the legislature obviously intended that the operator could award a piece of paper or a representation of value that would be redeemable. And that necessarily means that if you get enough of those representations of value or pieces of paper, you can get more than $5.
But do you think what we're talking about here is like Judge O'Neill used a Chuck E. Cheese game or a county fair game? Is that what the legislature was getting at?
It's exactly the same, only it just kind of looks different. You can go to the Chuck E. Cheese and I went the first time a couple of weeks ago for my grandson's 3-year-old birthday, and they have games that you can do a whole lot better than you can do with 8-liners. And it's their game.
They won.
I was killing when they throw the basketball at the thing and ran this popped up.
You didn't get any merchandise from Walmart, did you?
I got all those tickets, and Chuck E. Cheese has a gift shop behind there. I could have won if I'd stayed 2 or 3 days, I could have won a color TV. You know, so it's the same thing. The legislature just made a limit. And they picked, it's arbitrary, that's what the legislature's there for. And they said, this, if it's non-cash, if it's merchandise, if it's 10 times the amount of single player, $5, that just doesn't bother us. And so we are not going to, we're going to exclude that from the definition of a gambling device and leave that alone. And that's what the legislature is there for, is to make those kinds of decisions.
Well, the Chuck E. Cheese does have, most of those games have some skill to it, or either that or I'm very unlucky.
They have the drag line machine where you pick up an animal, and but they can, you can set the drag line in the machine, and they can set it where you won't ever win in your lifetime, or where you win every time. It's not skill. They may want to make you think it is, but it's not.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, as I understand your position, I thought you conceded today that it was the state's burden to meet the definition of gambling device.
Well, Your Honor, there is a tension between what Article 1818B and F say should happen in a civil forfeiture proceeding and what this court said in Runfelo.
I'm just trying to figure out what the state conceded.
Well, the state's position is that we have to produce evidence. We have to come forward and bear the burden of production that the property was lawfully seized, that we went before a magistrate and we established probable cause, a reasonable belief that this property was illegal or connected to an illegal activity.
So you'd have to establish the definition of gambling device under 4701, correct?
Well, in order to have met the probable cause standard to obtain a lawful warrant, yes, we would have established that.
Okay. And then the second step is, as I understand your briefing, you accept yourself from establishing 4701-4B, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, why do you exclude the state's burden there?
Because, Your Honor, 4701-4B does not describe a gambling device. It describes what is not a gambling device.
It's within the definition of gambling device, correct?
The phrase not excluded in paragraph B, yes, Your Honor, that's in with the definition of a gambling device. But if we go to 4701-4B, that describes what is not a gambling device. So it may. Well, Your Honor, there is a tension between what Article 1818B and F say should happen in a civil forfeiture proceeding and what this court said in Runfelo.
I'm just trying to figure out what the state conceded.
Well, the state's position is that we have to produce evidence. We have to come forward and bear the burden of production that the property was lawfully seized, that we went before a magistrate and we established probable cause, a reasonable belief that this property was illegal or connected to an illegal activity.
So you'd have to establish the definition of gambling device under 4701, correct?
In order to have met the probable cause standard to obtain a lawful warrant, yes, we would have established that.
Okay. And then second step is, as I understand your briefing, you accept yourself from establishing 4701-4B. Correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, why do you exclude the state's burden there?
Because, Your Honor, 4701-4B does not describe a gambling device. It describes what is not a gambling device.
It's within the definition of gambling device, correct?
The phrase not excluded under paragraph B, yes, Your Honor, that's in with the definition of a gambling device. But if we go to 4701-4B, that describes what is not a gambling device. So it could not be the state's burden to prove, in order to prove that it is a gambling device, that it's also what is not a gambling device.
Well, the concern I have here is that no one cited it. Is 4709 list defenses?
4709, I believe, defines a thing of value.
No, 4709 says other defenses. It is a defense to prosecution under this chapter that the conduct was, and then they list a series of defenses.
Right. I don't have the statute in front of me, Your Honor. But actually, if Your Honor is, I would agree that 4701-4B would be a potential defense, and that's what the legislature intended.
That's exactly my point. If 4701-B is a defense, as the state argues, why isn't it listed in 4709 as a defense?
Well, Your Honor, it's actually listed in 4702. If the one of the handouts that I gave the court today is 4702, and if you look at 4702, which defines the offense of gambling, 4702 specifically states that 4701-4B is the defense to prosecution for the offense of gambling. Now, under principles of statutory construction, 4701B should have the same meaning in throughout the entire Chapter 47. And if the legislature intended that it would be a definite defense to the offense of gambling, then that is the same. It has the same meaning.
But I have still got trouble. If you go tell the warrant judge, "Judge, we want to seize this machine, and we submit to you that it is an electronic device that for consideration affords the player an opportunity to receive a toy, the value of which is partially determined by chance," you're not going to get the warrant.
If it's a toy? Right. I mean, Your Honor,
well,
necessarily
then it looks
in
to me
the
like
affidavit.
You have to prove that it's not a toy.
Well, Your Honor, it's not an element of the state's case.
Well, you can't get a warrant if you don't. If you go in there and tell the judge it's a toy, he's going to read the statute and say, "Well, you can't get that."
If we tell the judge that it is an electromechanical contrivance that based on chance, partially or solely, and it accepts money, and it awards this prize, even if it's a toy. If we say that, that is reason to believe that it fits within the definition of a gambling device.
How can it if it says, just as plain as even you can see, that if it's only a toy, it's not a gambling device?
Well, Your Honor, if it was a toy, in other words, if you're saying, does the state have to prove 4701, that does it meet 4701-4B when it obtains its warrant? It doesn't, because it's not an element of the state's case, because it's a defense. And as a defense, like, for example, in comparison, in a criminal proceeding, the state would not have to refute the defense in its charging instrument, nor in its state's case in chief.
Well, it seems like if I'm the warrant judge, I'm going to be awfully upset if the state comes in and says, "We want to seize all of these machines, and we're not going to tell you whether they only give out toys or not, and it turns out they do, and we've just gone down there and seized a whole bunch of machines when the state knew that they
in practicality, all..." Your Honor, the state's affidavit would show that these machines were not awarding awards that were within the exclusion to the definition of a gambling device. It would, because there would be a criminal investigation, and this criminal investigation would include how these machines were operating and what these machines were awarding. And it is very clear in the facts of this case, Your Honor, that these machines were awarding gift certificates, and under the Cherry Master case, not only to Walmart, but to a furniture store, to gasoline stations. That is clearly not an award permitted under the statute. Moreover, we cannot forget that they were giving cash. Cash. Whether it was placed on other machines or not, it was cash, and that violates the statute.
Any other questions? Well, let me ask one thing about the cash. If the player never handles the cash, it is merely taken by an employee at the place, whatever you're doing, who goes and puts it back in the machine. You say that's the giving of cash?
Well, yes, Your Honor, because...
How is the owner of one of these machines? Let's suppose you have 20 or 30 in one place and people want to switch from one machine to another. How are they to do that? The owner has to manufacture tokens to that machine.
Well, no, Your Honor. I mean, I would assume if a player wants to go play another machine,
so
then he has to use his own cash.
Okay, so you can't ever...
But all he can win would be a non-cash merchandise prize.
So you cannot have as a prize the ability to play more games.
Exactly.
That's my question.
That would violate A and A.
So if they gave you a ticket at the end of your play and says, "Okay, you can take this ticket and go play another machine," that's precluded by A.
That's precluded.
Why didn't y'all argue A also precludes this?
Well, Your Honor, that would be another reason, but that was not a reason for the case. But yes, that is another reason. And the evidence did exactly establish that, because the evidence is under.
But you did not make the argument in the trial court? Or in the court of appeal?
The argument was not raised in the court of appeals, Your Honor.
But what if the machine just automatically, if you reached a certain number of points awarded games, and they say, "Okay, you've reached 500 points, so you get two more games," would that be allowed? that there wasn't any exchange or taking
actually,
something?
Actually, Your Honor, in 47019, I believe, it says that a thing of value is any benefit except an unrecorded right of replay. So it would have to be an unrecorded. In other words, if you won and it immediately just gave you another game, I mean, it wasn't recording it, then that would not necessarily fit within the definition of a gambling device. Because the definition of a gambling device prohibits the opportunity to win something by chance, with, you know, of money, anything that is a thing of value.
Any other questions? That concludes the argument, and the second calls, the court will take another brief.
All right. Session.